There's going to be part two tonight. If you can go all the way to that faraway place called the Chicago Temple. I asked Bibi Govinda Maharaj if he'll sing this evening at the temple. And he said, I do what I'm told. Okay, I'm telling you. Please sing. Yes, Maharaj. So, if you can make it, it's a sequel, part two. Not the same, but still nice. Very nice. In front of Kishore Kishori, so it's transcendentally nice. Earlier in the day, yesterday, I visited a family, well, there's a home program, at a family that are attending Sham Temple or something like that, where Vibhu Chaitanya is teaching Bhagavad Gita to children, and he developed a relationship with this family and started teaching more because the family is very eager, and so they hosted a program yesterday, and the topic that they wanted to have discussed was the goal of life. What's the purpose of life and that kind of thing. So I spoke on that topic, and one of the references I wanted to make, didn't get to because so many other things took precedence. So I wanted to speak on the same topic, but with a specific reference from Canto 3, Chapter 9. Srimad Bhagavatam, those that have your little nice gadgets, electronic devices, they call it in the airplanes, can look up Canto 3, Chapter 9, some of the early verses. So the scene in the sequence, this is Maitreya, who is describing to Vidura the process of creation, because Vidura asked. So Maitreya is obliging and describing many, many, many detailed, amazing events in the gradual unfolding of the creation. Of course, the most important principle of all is that Krishna is the cause of all causes. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Now Krishna is the Karana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes. And in the process of creation, Mahavishnu, who has as his prior cause, he's the Kala, a portion of a plenary portion of Krishna, so he's the Purusha avatar. He's the cause of creation, and many events take place. And the prior chapter is Garbhadakshay Vishnu has manifested within the universe, as he does within each universe. And when he enters within the universe, it's sealed. So it's very hot. So he perspires. And he fills up half the universe with his transcendental perspiration. Somehow, I guess he cools down, he stops perspiring. So half the universe is filled with Garbhadak ocean. And like the ocean, it has big waves. Not like little waves, big waves. And after some time, Garbhadakshay Vishnu when Garbhadakshay Vishnu enters into the universe, he brings with him a universe's worth, or a portion of samasti, the total living entities and the karma of those living entities. He within, brings them within his body from within the Mahatattva, and then enters into the universe with some portion of the living entities who are now within his body. So it's living entities are in the body of Mahavishnu, and then again in the body of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And the time energy, which is his energy, is working to awaken the dormant karma. This is a nice concept or a principle to understand. Creation comes about by releasing time, and dissolution comes about by withdrawing time. So again, for the next creation, the time energy is released, and so the then dormant karma starts to become activated. And the sum total of all the karma of all the living beings in the universe is the lotus, which bursts through the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. It's their karma. And within his body is all the living entities. One primary or chief amongst them is Lord Brahma, who appears first. No mother. He just appears from the body of Garbhadakshay Vishnu through the navel, through the lotus. And Lord Brahma does what Lord Brahma does. He begins self-inquiry. He wants to understand all kinds of things, you know, the fundamental things like, where am I? Who am I? What's the purpose? Because this was the topic. What's the purpose of human existence? So he's inquiring, he's inquisitive. Jigyasu. Brahma Jigyasa. He's inquiring into the absolute reality. And he does a number of things. He sees the lotus, so he climbs down the lotus with a reasoning that maybe if I saw the lotus, very logical. So he climbs down and down and down and down and down and down and down. Our own endeavor isn't going to find out where our source is. But then he hears tapa, so he understands the meaning. He performs tapasya for 1,000 celestial years. This question was asked in New York at 22nd Avenue, somebody that's read. Brahma lives for 100 years, and how is it that he did this long period of meditation, but he only lives for 100 years? Right? Because like the 1,000 is more than 100 for the most part. But it's 1,000 celestial years. It's not Brahma's years. So time is relative, and it's like, you know, some time. It's just part of what he does in his life. And accordingly, you know, each morning when he wakes up, he does some sadhana too. So, 1,000 celestial years. And then he gets his realizations, which are described in Brahma Samhita, the prayers, Govindam prayers. But before those Govindam prayers it describes, he realizes, he has a glimpse, at least, of his eternal identity as a maidservant of Krishna, at least our particular Lord Brahma. And there's other Lord Brahmas that have different rasa, like the one in the second canto is friendship. So he realizes, at least he gets a glimpse, without all the detail, of his rasa. Now he still has, and then he offers his Govinda prayers, and then he still has this impetus to create. So at the end of Brahma Samhita, he asks the Lord, how do these two fit together? Aren't I going to lose my realization if I start following this impetus to create? You know, I like my devotional practices, but then I have to go to school or go to work or do my job or take care of worldly duties, and am I not going to lose my Krishna consciousness? And so, and then the other way around, if I just do my sadhana and my devotional practices, will I be negligent to my duties? You know that one. So what he does in the third canto, chapter 9, is, well, for the Lord appears before him, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and the details and details of his features are described, and the Lord speaks to him. And he gives hints, without detail, he gives hints as to the elements of creation with which Lord Brahma is supposed to create the universe. But Lord Brahma, although he's superbly intelligent, he knows how to do lots of things, he understands, I need mercy. Although I have the ingredients and I have intelligence and I have lots of things, I need mercy. We should learn from that. We also require mercy, whatever qualification and tools and resources and facilities and things. We need mercy. And so he offers very beautiful prayers to Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and that's chapter 9, Brahma's prayers. And the first thing that he does, well, first two things, is expressions of humility and acknowledgement that you are the source. You are the source of the creative energy with which I am to create, or through which I am to create. So that the application part for us is same. The resources come from the Supreme Lord, the ability comes from the Supreme Lord, the energy to do comes from the Supreme, it's His. And we're His servant. And if you don't start at that point, you're not likely to be at that point later in time. Chances are you could start at that point and get lost in doing what you're doing and get caught up in, you know, thinking that you're the doer. Specifically in chapter 9 of Canto 2, Lord Brahma prays. Lord gives him the opportunity for benediction. And one of his benedictions he asks for is, please protect me from the false ego of thinking that I'm the creator. Saying, before we take up some service, it's as he's doing here, please protect me from thinking I am the doer. Because that's how we normally think. Acting through false ego, I'm the doer. And then we become entangled in the complexities of material nature and forget Krishna and, you know, have our problems, our miseries. So he acknowledges the Supreme Lord as the creative energy source. And then he expresses himself in a compassionate way. Because, in other words, the purpose of creation is not so that I can build something, own something, do something, achieve something. The material consciousness is that. I study hard and work hard so I can do something, achieve something, accomplish something, and have a good sense of, you know, yay, I'm good, I can do things. Bhakti is different. It's service unto others and service to the Supreme Lord. Service unto others and service to the Supreme Lord. Not that service to others is service to the Supreme Lord. It depends on the consciousness behind. We should see the service that we do unto others, Vaishnavas and others, is service unto the Supreme Lord. Because they're His parts and parcels. It's service unto the Supreme Lord. Serving the members of a family is serving the family. Anyway, so I'll just read a few verses, and I want to get to text 19 in the purport. So let's start with 16. Your lordship is the prime root of the tree of the planetary systems. The tree has grown by first penetrating the material nature in three trunks as me, Shiva, and you, the Almighty, for creation, maintenance, and dissolution. And we three have grown with many branches. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you, the tree of the cosmic manifestation. Then comes compassion. People in general all engage in foolish acts, not in the really beneficial activities enunciated directly by you for their guidance, as long as their tendency for foolish work remains powerful. All their plans in the struggle for existence will be cut to pieces. I therefore offer my obeisances unto him who acts as eternal time. Well, that's the Supreme Lord. He acts as supreme, as eternal time. Time I am. Kalosmi, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says. I've read somewhere, I think even Prabhupada mentioned, that when the gentleman that created the first atomic bomb, name was Oppenheimer, when the bomb exploded, he quoted that Bhagavad Gita verse, time I am, the destroyer of all things. So time is the atomic bomb, or time is the destroyer of all things. The atomic bomb can't destroy all things. It can destroy a lot of things. But it's the power of time that destroys things. So it's the power of time that brings things into being. It's the power of time that maintains things. It's the power of time that withdraws things. And that time energy is working under his control. He is eternal time. So this is the purport that I wanted to read. Text 17, actually. People in general are all engaged in senseless work. They are systematically unmindful of the real beneficial work, which is the devotional service of the Lord, technically called the Archana regulations. The Archana regulations are directly instructed by the Lord in the Narada Pancharatra and by the intelligent men who know well that the highest perfectional goal of life is to reach Lord Vishnu, who is the root of the tree called the cosmic manifestation, just like the banyan tree example in Bhagavad Gita, with the roots up and the branches down. Banyan tree, roots up, branches down, upside down. It's a reflection of the real tree, the spiritual world. This material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. The tree of material existence has its root in the Supreme Lord. Also in the Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita, such regulative activities are clearly mentioned. Foolish people do not know that their self-interest is in realization of Vishnu. The Bhagavatam, this is Prahlad Maharaj, offers some prayers to, well not prayers, words of advice, prayers to Vishnu, but words of advice to his beloved father, Hiranyakashipu. Basically, he's saying to Hiranyakashipu, don't worry, Dad, you're never going to understand where how I learned what I learned and what's the source of everything, and no problem, you'll never understand it anyways. because you're too much attached to enjoying external things, and therefore you won't be able to understand Krishna. So there are three verses. Let's just say the first line. Matirna Krishne Paratakswatova. That's the first verse. And Nate Vidu Svartakatemi Vishnu. That's the second one. These are verses that Prabhupada would quote over and over. The third one, less quoted. Naisha Matis Tavad Urukramang Grim. Urukramang Grim. So it's translated in a paraphrased way. So I'm going to read the paraphrased translation of those three verses. Persons who are determined to totally rot in false material happiness cannot become Krishna-minded either by instructions from teachers, by self-realization, meaning by their own effort, or by parliamentary discussions. Let's get together and have a discussion about what's the goal of life. That's not going to do it either. Instruction from others, their own effort, or combination of the two. They will not be able to understand the goal of life by those methods as long as they're determined to pursue temporary material happiness. Rather, they are dragged by the unbridled senses into the darkest region of ignorance, and thus they are madly engaged in what is called chewing the chewed. Punash punak charva to charva na nam. Anyone who has heard Prabhupada's lectures, these phrases are so common. Punak punash charva to charva na nam. Matir na krishne paratak svato. Is Prahlad speaking to his father? His father has asked him, Prahlad, where did you learn this worship of Vishnu? Who taught you this? And his answer is, you'll never understand it anyway, my father. What's the use of explaining? Because you're so much attached to material enjoyment, even if I explained it, even if you made an effort on your own, and even if there was a whole assembly of a conference to understand the thing, you'd not understand the thing. Instead, dragged to the darkest places of ignorance, trying to enjoy the same happiness again and again. Just different, to do it different ways, but it's the same thing again and again, chewing the chewed. Prabhupada's example is sugar cane. No, we don't have that in Chicago, sugar cane. But many of you from India, you sugar cane. So the guy runs the sugar cane through the sugar cane grinder, you know, 10 times, 15 times, and somebody comes along and picks up some of the chaff or the pulp. Just, you know, it's been through the grinder and start to chew on it. No juice. It's been removed. So chewing the chewed. Or there's, you know, the Western example. Somebody's chewed some gum and they stick the gum somewhere. Somebody takes the gum and chews the chewed gum. Yummy. No juice. Besides, not very hygienic. Chewing the chewed. Material life. Chewing the chewed. Just doing it again and doing it again and doing it again. Try to do it a different way, but do it again. It's the same principle. And that obstinacy to try to experience happiness where there is no happiness. In the material world, it's a place where it's dukkha, not sukha. But keep trying and keep trying. It's chewing the chewed. Then, because of their foolish activities, they are unaware that the ultimate goal of human life is to achieve Vishnu, the Lord of the cosmic manifestation. And so, their struggle for existence is in the wrong direction of material civilization, which is under the external energy. They are foolish men, just as one blind man is led by another blind man, and they both fall in the ditch. Anta yatantair upaniyamanas. The blind man is leading another blind man. It's a material civilization. Just the other day, hearing Prabhupada speaking here in Chicago in a room conversation about the condition of society in the West, and the person being interviewed or in the room conversation said, well, you know, it's pretty bad in India too, you know. And how is that if the wisdom is there? And Prabhupada said it's the leaders are unqualified. And he referred to the verse, the blind leading the blind, where are they going to end up? Oh, let me help you. I'll lead you to where? They can't see properly. So the blind leading the blind both end up in the ditch. So proper spiritual vision in those that are by nature leaders, many people by nature are followers, and some people by nature are leaders. The leaders, those that have that karma or propensity in their life especially, need to have eyes. And the eyes are the brahmanas, or those that can see Brahman, those that can see the nature of the absolute truth. So minus qualified brahmanas, minus the training and education, Prabhupada was also making this point, people in this age, wherever they are in the world, they're born the lowest of mankind, lower than the four orders of social life, not even shudras, lower than shudras by birth. And the challenge is to take lower than shudras by birth. It's not just a question of nation, it's a question of lacking of samskaras and proper purificatory methods being applied to the soul for upliftment of the soul. Minus that, then the challenge is to take the victims of the age of Kali to the position of most qualified first class individuals, men and women. It's a challenge. And sometimes when doing that, the persons who are being assisted, they make noise. Once Prabhupada said, do not think that you have come to Krishna consciousness because you are pious. Oh, because of my many pious activities I've come to Krishna consciousness. It's not that stack up piety upon piety and piety and piety and then you can get to devotion. Otherwise, if that was so, then material can create spiritual. Accumulate enough material and you can get spiritual. Not so. It's descending mercy. So Prabhupada said, don't think that it's because of your pious activities. Rather, I found you in some dark place. I'm dragging you by the hair and taking you to Krishna. And you're screaming and flailing, oh, Prabhupada. But I'm taking you anyway. There was at least that particular circumstance with that particular devotee. He was speaking like that. Or it was to a group. Actually, it was to a group. So it takes descending mercy, especially in this age of Kali, but in any age, for one to become spiritually progressive, it takes a qualified person like the bottom of the well. Another one of Prabhupada's classic examples. Help! Help! And it's nothing that they can do of their own effort to get them out of the bottom of the well. Help! And try to climb up the side of the well. It doesn't work. You're stuck. Unless somebody that's not in the well comes to the top of the well and hears you calling, help! And so they lower a rope. And all you have to do is Grab a hold of the rope. You don't even have to climb the rope. Just hold on to the rope. And they'll pull you out. Well, wait a minute, where did this rope come from? And what's it made of? How did it get here? Never mind, grab hold of the rope. Just hold on. Take the instructions of qualified instructors and receive it in your heart and keep it there and live your life accordingly. And be relieved from material existence. We're in such a situation also where, frankly, although we've heard so many times, and it's one of the reasons I decided to speak on this topic, that with the family that was asking yesterday, speak on this topic, they're new. And, you know, many of us here are, some of us are new, but some of us are very experienced devotees. But how clearly, frankly, how clearly do we understand the goal? Because if we understood the goal, it would be very easy to take the means to achieve the goal. But we struggle. We struggle with applying the means or the process of devotional service. We compromise here and there and struggle needlessly, because we're attached to that which isn't the goal, and that which is unwholesome and unhealthy. And as Prabhupada is writing here, totally determined to rot in false material happiness, cannot become Krishna-minded, either by instructions from teachers, by self-realization, by trying yourself, or hold a convention. Let's discuss how to become free from material existence. And the third verse. Such foolish men. This is the one that Prabhupada quotes less, but still quotes. Naisham matis tavat arukramam grim. Such foolish men cannot be attracted towards the activities of the Supreme Powerful. Capital S and capital P. The Supreme Powerful, who is actually the neutralizing measure for their foolish activities, unless and until they have the good sense to be guided by the great souls who are completely freed from material attachment. Nishkinchananam na virnita yavat. That's the qualification of the person who is at the top of the well lowering the rope into the well. They're not in the well. They're on land or on the earth, and they're not attached to the well, like the dark well of material existence condition. And their hearts being concerned with compassion, they extend a rope. And the Prabhupada's expression is, the rope represents instructions. What gets us is the instructions. And if we take hold of the instructions, just take hold of the instructions, don't let go. Well, I'm tired, I'm thirsty, I'm hungry. Hold on to the rope, man. And you can be pulled out. And the last paragraph, Prabhupada is speaking about the process of deity worship. So we have temples, either collective temples like this, or in your home, your own altar and your deity, your temple in your home. As it goes along with the instructions, the instruction to chant and the instruction to hear Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam's message, the deity worship process follows one of the nine essential processes. So here's the last paragraph. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord asks everyone to give up all other occupational duties and absolutely engage in archana activities or in pleasing the Lord. So he's expanding archana, not just the deity form, but varieties of service to Krishna. But almost no one is attracted to such archana activity. Everyone is more or less attracted by activities which are conditions of rebellion against the Supreme Lord. The systems of jnana and yoga are also indirectly rebellious acts against the Lord. There is no auspicious activity except archana of the Lord. Jnana and yoga are sometimes, so it's bhakti in general, in case there's some confusion. Jnana and yoga are sometimes accepted with the purview of bhakti when the ultimate aim is Vishnu and not otherwise. The conclusion is that not only the devotees of the Lord are bona fide human beings eligible for salvation, only the devotees of the Lord are bona fide human beings eligible for salvation. Others are vainly struggling for existence without actual benefit. So Brahma is, what's the purpose of creation? It might have been last year or the year before, I can't remember. I think he was last year or the year before, attending the Chicago Rath Yatra. I was introduced, because the devotees know that I visit China, I was introduced to a Chinese woman who's been coming to our temple. And her name is T, spelled T-E. And I forget what the rest of her name is, but that's just that part I remember. And she said, I have a question. Can I ask a question? I said, sure. And she said, why is there creation? It's like, you know, is the purpose, what's the purpose of existence? Same, just the reverse way of asking it. We're here, we are. What's the purpose? What's the purpose? You know, sometimes people, so I responded, sometimes people ask that question in a different way. They say, why is there suffering? I understand from your classes, the Bhakti Riksha class at least, why is there suffering? Why do bad things happen? Even sometimes people are good people, bad things happen. You know that puzzle, the enigma? Why do bad things happen to good people? Bad things happen to good people. Why? So it's another way of asking, why is there creation? It's not like the purpose of creation is vindictive. You're bad, you're going to have to suffer. Slap. That's not the nature of God. The purpose of creation, it's described very nicely earlier in this third canto, is to give the living entity an opportunity to revive their full consciousness and full happiness, even though they have so much other desire. And the karma connected to acting on those previous desires or previous actions connected to those desires. Despite that, the Supreme Lord wishes, he desires, icha, it's his volition, that living entities get the opportunity at least, so this is the purpose of human life, to get the opportunity to fully revive their fullest happiness possible. That's the purpose of creation. So, supposing, you know, we said at the end of the program, we have a nice surprise for you. Everyone is going to receive a check for $1 million. And there's no conditions. You can use that $1 million however you like. And you can say, oh, thank you, Maharaj, this is the nicest. I didn't come here expecting $1 million, but it's great. Okay, so now we all walk home with $1 million. Now what are we going to do with that $1 million? Surveys have been done to people that win the lottery or the jackpot or whatever. You want to guess? Totally destroyed. Because they don't know what to do with all that. Their karma is not like have 18 million or whatever, 30 million. All the people that were their friends are no longer their friends. They just want their money. So they feel, you know, isolated and lonely, and then they have all this money, what are they going to do? They start thinking philanthropy, but then it also comes into indulgence. And it ends up often with, you know, habit-forming drug taking and, you know, madness and depression. That's what the studies show. Now here we have, it's not $1 million, but it's more than $1 million. It's the human form of life. You can't buy a human form of life for $1 million. So here we have a human form of life. You don't even have to walk out the door. It's right now. And what are you going to use it for? Or what is its purpose? It's connected to the purpose of creation. It's to awaken the fullness of happiness and fullness of consciousness. That's the facility. And we can misuse it too. Misuse it like a sophisticated animal for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And just, you know, do it in cool ways. Try it this way and try it that way. But that's polished animal life. It's not human life. Human life is understanding the goal and systematically, purposefully executing all the activities of our life, not just the morning sadhana ones, but all the activities of our life in such a way that it will bring us closer to that objective or that goal. That's our mission. And that's our opportunity. So here's your $1 million. Now what are you going to do with it? Depends on your consciousness. And depends on how you are guided, how you will utilize it. Once the goal is identified, and also the perils in reaching the goal, you know, like if you're giving directions to somebody how to get from point A to point B, and you know it's really easy to get lost at a certain place, so you go over that certain place, there's a fork in the road, and you like 16 different ways you explain how to not take the wrong turn. You know what I mean? Don't go left, go right. You know there's a little yellow house over there, and over there there's a barn, and you go that way. And over there there's a big tree and, you know, white fence. Don't go that way. Make sure you go to the right. You got it? See, just let's do it again. Just like, because you go the wrong way, you can just waste so much time. So when we know that there's dangers on the path of self-realization, we may take special note and say it again and say it again and take special caution and say it again. Just like if you know that you have perhaps some shortcoming or some weakness or some tendency for God knows what. And be sure He knows what. Supposing it's, you know, wasting time on the internet, or supposing it's anger, or supposing it's lust, or supposing it's, you know, speaking harshly, or supposing it's whatever it is. God knows what. When you know that there's some shortcoming, then you pay special attention to pray to Krishna and, you know, go right and don't go left. Make the steps towards Krishna very careful in that territory. Be very careful in that territory. And then proceed. I remember on the way to Gitanagari, we're coming at the end of this month, many of us will be going to a retreat in Gitanagari. And there's one intersection where there used to be lots of accidents on the way to Gita Nagari. It was one of those flashing yellow lights in four directions. Now it's a red light, green light, but it used to be a flashing yellow light. Slow down because it's dangerous. They still had accidents. It was like coming up 322 and you make the exit on 27 and go across that highway. So the flashing light says, danger, 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 danger. So you go slowly, look extra, take extra caution. Now it's red light, green light, because of too many accidents. People couldn't be cautious. Devotional service is voluntary, or bhakti is voluntary. So it's not somebody standing there, you know, with the red light. You can't, even somebody can say, here's the red light, don't go. They're not looking, so I go. there's risk involved. That's the reason the red light is there. It's risk. So be very careful. And one of the measures that will help one be careful and proceed with caution is knowing the goal. But those that don't know the goal, these verses are there, spoken by Prahlad to his beloved father, Hiranyakashipu. Why it is that persons who are too much attached to external enjoyments, the real purpose of life isn't going to be seen by them, understood by them. It's just beyond their grasp. And as compassion is, feeling concern. And now back to Lord Brahma, and we're done. Lord Brahma is seeing that too. When I do this creation program, I don't want the living entities that are already inclined to material enjoyment to just like have a sandbox to play in. More material enjoyment program. I want to do this in such a way that your purpose is fulfilled. At least the opportunity is provided. So I'm depending upon you with this, to provide the creative potency, to provide constant remembrance of you, and to do this creation in such a way that those who are prone to misfortune will be relieved from the consequence of that proneness to misfortune and suffering unnecessarily, material existence. So we have our Srimad Bhagavatam. It's like light in this dark age of Kali. Enough light, like the light of the sun that can illumine everything. If we take the message, hear the message, and bring the message within, and then let the message shine from within, it becomes the light of our life, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm a Srimad Bhagavatam fan. And maybe you'll become a Srimad Bhagavatam fan too. Maybe you already are. Any comments or questions?
I have one.
Yeah.
How long is a celestial year?
How long is what?
A celestial year.
It's a long time.
Like compared to Brahma's one day, is it shorter, I think?
Yes. Yes, it's a fraction of a moment, 1 year. There's somewhere there's half that it's a moment, less than a moment. So you put it 1,000 less than a moment. It's not, doesn't sound like too long, but you know, 1,000 celestial years in any case. Yes, Niladri. Devotional service can be performed in the modes of nature. Sure. Let's go to Kapila Dev's instructions to Devahuti. I'll paraphrase to keep it simple. Devahuti says, I have a doubt. From you I've understood that devotional service is pure. And I also know that there's modes of nature. So is it possible that someone that's influenced by the modes of nature can engage in devotional service which is pure? And Kapila Dev says, yes. Devotional service remains pure, but one who's moved by the mode of ignorance may engage in devotional service in such a way that they do something so that they get some power so they can destroy their enemy. In the mode of passion, someone may engage in devotional service in such a way that they'll get attention and respect and something. Regard from other, oh, here's a religious person. And they think that's the purpose, so I can get that. And in the mode of goodness, the person is motivated by, I would like to do something in devotion to Krishna because it's to be done. It's a deed. Or that it will make me purified. And that's mode of goodness. So then transcendental devotional service is causelessly performed. There's nothing that starts it, and there's nothing that checks it. He gives the example, just like the Ganges River flowing downstream during rainy season. It just flows. There's nothing that can stop it. It flows. And when one hears the message of Krishna like that, one's mind just goes. There's no effort. It just goes to Krishna, to the topic. In all those cases, devotional service is pure. One's consciousness may not be pure. One's consciousness may become influenced by or contaminated by or polluted by the modes of nature, tainted by the modes of nature. It's like air is pure, but then there's stuff in the air, pollutants in the air. And it's hay fever season. Some people have that in the springtime. Pollen in the air, and they'd sneeze and have other allergic problems. But the air itself is pure. Okay? Yeah. Well, a few things, multiple things. One is you can put it in an envelope, seal it, and place it on the altar. These are my goals, my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire. In other words, we're dependent. It's not... So another way of saying the same is avoid the sense of I am going to achieve some goal. Kartaham iti manyate. Immediately that binds one in passion to fruitive mentality, and even if the arena is devotional service that's pure, one's consciousness being contaminated gets drawn into the modes of nature as opposed to pure devotional service. It's not that, like, let's just take our founder Acharya. He had a goal. He had a mission. He didn't just get on a boat in the Jaladutta saying, Ke sera sera. He had a mission. But he was fully dependent. He was fully in the mood of just being the servant, being the instrument of. So that's like, you know, putting in the envelope and placing it on the altar. My dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, I know that it is your happiness if living entities that are now bereft of bhakti can receive bhakti in their hearts. It is your desire for that. So I volunteer to try to be your instrument. Unfortunately, I'm influenced by the modes of nature. I'm a very dull instrument, not a sharp instrument. Nonetheless, this is my offering to you. So please protect me, same as Lord Brahma. Read it, it's a nice little... He prays to Lord Vishnu, please protect me from the mentality of thinking that I'm the creator while I'm doing the act of creating. The goal? Ours is something far less than that. But please protect me from the mentality of thinking that I'm the creator. And that means, you know, that's on the protection side. And the positive side is the mood of surrender, the mood of humble service. And then it's just, the outcome is what it is. I make my, I'll say it this way. My department is the service department. Krishna's is the results department. And I do my service with a purpose of pleasing Krishna. And the results are up to him. I can't blame Krishna for not giving a result, and if there is a good result, Krishna gets the credit. It's up to him. I make my best use of my intelligence to make a plan, set the proper goals, reasonable ones, apply my mind, apply my senses, my heart. The results, that's my department, service department. And Krishna's is the results department. And I'm dependent upon him. My happiness and distress is not whether this result, that result. Krishna chooses this way or Krishna chooses that way. That's up to him. Okay, looks like we're done. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.